I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever get lost in the woods at night with no way to find your way back home? No? Well, have you ever signed up for our Patreon before? No? Well, now you can! Sign up today at patreon.com/TMS and get out of those woods once and for all! Coming up on the morning stream, Ted Bundy's this and that.
Metzula approved zones.
He died of being 114.
We're all tired of Bono.
Not worth the wait.
Stare at your hands and don't puke.
Girthquake!
Coronal mass ejaculations.
Scapegoatee.
I'll giggle it.
You'll get no privacy, no grace, and no Lieutenant Yar!
A comic book is a comic book. Is a comic book.
Resident Knucklehead.
Blurry Shark. Furt, 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 furt.
In the drawer the whole time with Wendy. And more on this episode of The Morning Stream.
You will do anything he says.
And if I refuse?
Then you will not leave this room alive.
I will obey your orders.
Good.
I see the pizza guy, but I don't see the pizza.
The Morning Stream. The Morning Stream. Am I still here? Hello?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to TMS. It's The Morning Stream for April 11th, 2024. Scott Johnson here, Brian there. Hi, Brian.
Hello, here and there.
Yeah.
And everywhere.
Also, he has a last name as well. It's Ibbot. It's I did Scott Johnson, and then I just said Brian. And, you know, you have a whole
I'm
name.
Like Twiggy. I did Madonna. You could just use one name. Great. Here's how old I am. Like, my first go-to of, like, people who only need one name. Twiggy.
Twiggy. You know, I always wonder about this. This is funny you bring this up, because just this morning I was having a conversation with my daughter about this.
Yeah. About Twiggy?
If you're Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
And that's the name she goes by. So when you see credits for this new Joker 2 movie, it says, you know,
she's Lady Phoenix. Gaga. She's not and Stephanie then, Germanotti. She's Lady Gaga.
Even when they just do last name, they just go Gaga. They don't mess around. Right?
Phoenix. Yeah. Gaga.
So we don't have like a Dwayne Johnson kind of problem with hers. It's just Lady Gaga is her name. And I always wonder, because I think she is really talented and I really like her. And she's, I think she's a good actor. She's an amazing singer. Like all her career, freaking well done. Two thumbs up. Mm-hmm. Her jumping into the football stadium, still one of my favorite gifs of all time. Like you just got it going on.
Whee! Yeah, great.
But here's the question I always end up with her. It feels like the kind of name that once things really kicked off for you, that you might eventually go, I wish it was something else. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, you brought up The Rock. The Rock is a great example of this. Like, The Rock got my whole wrestling career and all this is going great. And give me 25 steamed chicken breasts and 43 eggs. That's my breakfast. All right.
Right.
Things are going really well. Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, Dwayne Johnson. How are you? Although, didn't he? I think he just got The Rock back or something. Like, somebody owned the right, or the WWF wouldn't give him the rights.
Allstate,
but no.
I think Allstate owned it.
Oh, Allstate owned The Rock? What? Really? Is that true? Oh, you're making that up. No, like...
I think it was Prudential. I guess it was Prudential to get a piece of The Rock.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. Allstate, you're in good hands. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I think what happened is, I don't think it was like a suit or anything, but now that he's a part owner or he's some kind of investor in the WWF, E, whatever it is, E, E? Is it WWF or E? Okay, it's E now.
E, yeah.
It hasn't been WWF for like two decades, so I don't know what's wrong with me. But anyway, I think he got the rights to The Rock back, and I don't know if that means his new movies and stuff will have The Rock or not.
If he'll be back to The Rock, yeah.
Or he'll stick with his name.
He's gotten to the point where I think he's as well known under both names that he carries enough clout that if somebody says, "Oh, the new movie with Dwayne Johnson," they're not going to go, "Who?" And somebody, "Oh, The Rock." Oh, yeah, him.
I think they're
going to be they know who Dwayne Johnson is.
Yeah.
But if it was like Joaquin Phoenix and Stephanie Germanotti. Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Yeah.
Yeah. You had to remind me that was her original name. I had forgotten about it. So I guess she's fine. She's locked in. It's fine. But I just, if it was me, I would get sick of whatever. Like, this is true of anybody. Lil Wayne. Like, freaking F that. I want to be Wayne, you know? Mm-hmm. Or what's another one? who has it? Bono. Do you ever just get tired of that? You know? You'd rather be called, you know his real name. What's his real name? Bono's real name?
Paul Hewson.
Don't you ever want to just be called Paul? Like, hey, I'm Paul. Probably. I'm going to go have a Bloody Mary on Sunday. I'm Paul, everybody. Paul is the name, not Bono. I don't know. I think about that sometimes. Anyway, that doesn't matter. What matters is we're here to do a show. We're glad you're all here with us. And we're going to get going. Our pal Nikki, Dr. Nikki. She goes by Dr. Headbutt quite often.
Really?
Yeah.
Because that's what sheep do, right? That's how sheep greet each other. They headbutt.
I assume that's what that's from. She could confirm or deny that.
I bet it is, yeah.
She's got that name on Twitter and stuff. But anyway, she says this. Dear Scott and Brian, random question for the show. When traveling somewhere new, do you always try to seek... What do you always try to seek out? For example, I always try to find natural history museums, botanical gardens, and oddity shops because I'm weird like that. Love the show, though, Nikki. So, Brian, when you go to a new town, let's say when you went to Ireland or Japan.
Okay.
What is your first?
Well, those are tougher examples. I mean, I think when I was doing, because I was traveling solo a lot when I worked at the software company in the 90s. And my ritual was leave the airport, get my rental car, drive to the hotel, drop my stuff off, and then find a nearby comic shop. and see if like there was any sort of they've got these cool statues that I'm never going to have room to fit in my suitcase and take home or that sort of thing. I think for me now, I mean, there is that. Like when we went to, there was this cool, it was in Dublin. There was this cool corner that we always seemed to be going past, and for some reason, a blood donation facility. And up there with the blood donation facility, there were statues of like Batman, a vampire. I can't remember like all the ones they had around this corner. And then there was like a game shop, games and comics shop. And it took 3 days for me to say, "Team, do we have time for me to run in there and look around and just see what they have?" And there was a wax museum too, which I think the wax museum is why why they had those statues up there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, that's probably still a number one thing I look for. Maybe a restaurant near the hotel. That basically I can go grab a bite before I come back and crash for the night kind of thing.
Sure.
How about you?
Sure. I'm kind of with her on the oddity shop thing. Like the first time I went to New Orleans, I was like, all right, I need some voodoo. I need to see some weird shit.
I need some voodoo in my life.
Yeah. So let's go find all the weird stuff. And we would always do that. We do that when Kim and I go to Vegas alone. Sometimes we just drive around and look for weird shops, and we try to stay within like Mitsula approved zones because we know we can get into some trouble in some of those areas. But we'll find a street with just like the zombie preparedness store.
Yeah,
we found that randomly. Nobody told us about it.
And that is in an industrial area. Yeah. Like that is in a very weird.
It's a strange part of town.
Nondescript big block buildings with no signs on them, and then the zombie preparedness with high fences, I think, around that thing.
Yeah, so and they got like an old Jeep out front that's all banged up. They got like fake barbed wire everywhere. It was awesome. So cool.
Did you go to the Zach Bagans' Oddities Museum. Have you been out to that one in Vegas?
I have not been to that yet. You're talking about it made me want to check that out. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, Tanner and Alex and Tina and I went to that, and that thing was creepy cool, but it would be right up your alley as far as like, I mean, there's you know, your serial killer artifacts, like here's all the drawings that John Wayne Gacy did in jail. Look how many clowns he drew, and here's Charles Manson's blah blah blah, and so on. Ted Bundy's this and that. But then you've also got like, here is a whole room full of creepy porcelain dolls.
yeah, I would like that. You are speaking my language.
Yeah, it is. It's worth checking out. I know the list of things that people are wanting to do in Vegas is extensive and jam-packed, and I think some of you people are a little crazy for how much stuff you're trying to fit in. It's like you're thinking this is a regular city where you can get from place A to place B in 2 minutes. You cannot.
No, you can't do it.
But anyway, that's worth checking out, the Zach Bagans, what is it called? Oddities and Artifacts or something? It's just worth saying.
But the Zach Bagan part, if I remember that, I'll find it, right?
Yeah, if you remember Zach Bagan, yeah.
There's a place in Tijuana that I had to go to. I do not remember the name of this place, but when Kim and I went to Tijuana,
dog and pony show.
Definitely wasn't that. But it was this shop. Everybody said, oh, you have to go there. And sure enough, it's like a lot of them where they're just trying to sell you ridiculous stuff for stupid money. And then if you don't want it, they'll go down on price. And then it's all like most of Tijuana, but the stuff they had there was crazy cool. Cannot remember the name. But they had like actual shrunken heads. At least they claim they were. I don't know. And it was.
I mean,
amazing.
They were heads. They were small. Did they come out of a human being? Were they previously attached to someone that was alive? Maybe not. But
it's kind of questionable. Sure. I'm pretty sure they weren't. Or maybe I don't know. That was what was great about Tijuana is everything felt like a little bit on the edge of real or vaguely legal. Like. Ugh, really? You're going to sell me Elvis's toilet seat he died on? That seems unlikely that it's here in Tijuana and that no one's had it before, but okay, give me your sales pitch. I mean, it was a lot of weird stuff like that. Yeah. But anyway, Dr. Nikki, you're like us. We like the weird stuff. So you're not weird is what we're saying.
No, not at all. Not at all. Curious what other people seek out. Somebody mentioned local breweries, restaurants. What other things people... seek out. I think it's a comfort thing. I think it's like, oh, I'm in this strange place. It's new. What's something that I'm familiar with? And your oddities, kind of going to always be the same everywhere. You'll get a little more voodoo in the, in the French Quarter than you will anywhere else. But, you know, a comic book is a comic book is a comic book, right? Spider-Man looks the same in Dublin as he does in Tokyo, as he does in, Schenectady, right? Yep. It's all the same. So.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You want to find the stuff that's going to make you feel either you want to feel like you're seeing something you've never seen before, or in combination with like, oh, they've got a McDonald's here. Wonder what that's like in Taiwan. I'm gonna go eat at this Taiwanese McDonald's. That's the best beef I ever had. Like, there's that kind of thing going on. I felt that way in China because I loved all the weird shit in China, but. Man, that McDonald's was good. Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
it was so good.
We had to, like our friends in Australia when we went there took us to a McDonald's that had like one of their burgers was a beetroot burger, and it was a regular quarter pounder, I think, with beets on. It was like, this is so different, familiar. That meat still tastes like McDonald's meat. Pink slime meat, but it's got beetroot on it, and it's really
weird.
Good.
I bet that sounds all right. Actually, I could eat that.
It is really, it's surprisingly good. I mean, you put pickles on burgers, so why not beets? Pickled beets.
Yeah, why not? I say, do it. Get your beetroot on, everybody. Yeah. Speaking of other places, let's talk from a Canadian point of view, real quick. Here.
Sure. Our local resident knucklehead Jeff Sire.
That's right, cranky Canadian Jeff Sire. He's not that. He's not that cranky. He's fine.
No, but like their money, he has holes in him too.
He has absolutely. He's got holes. Let me tell you. Anyway, he says this: Scott and Brian, a story to continue the worst flight ever discussion from Wednesday. We talked about bad flights.
Yeah.
He says, in the 1990s, I was a paratrooper in the Canadian Army. Well, we salute you for your fine work for the Canadian Army.
That's right.
We were jumping in to start a winter exercise. This is a winter in Canada, so we do not F around with how we dress. Big, thick parkas,
mucklucks.
Oh, why does that K look funny? Mucklucks is correct. And big Arctic mittens. Just pictures, just big ass mittens on.
Yeah, I'm just picturing like basically he looks like that kid in A Christmas Story who gets his tongue stuck to the pole.
Yep, yep. Send us a photo. We'd love it. This is in addition to carrying our weapons, ammo, rucksacks, and snowshoes. All of this kit is carried by each paratrooper, and with their parachute, the average weight of each paratrooper is about 305 pounds. Notice he used pounds. I appreciate that.
Wow. Wow. 305. Like, how does that affect the parachute's ability to to help you descend at a slow rate?
Jeez. Well, and I assume the 305 includes, let's say the paratrooper weighs 220.
It's the weight of the dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Weight of the dude plus the stuff. I hope they hold you. Anyway, we are doing contour flying for the two-hour flight of the drop zone or to the drop zone. This means that the C-130, this is the plane, flies as low as possible, so about 100 to 200 feet off the deck to avoid detection by radar. So low-flying plane. So the two-hour flight feels like a roller coaster as you go up over hills and descend into valleys and follow frozen rivers. So here's where it gets gnarly.
Okay.
These flights are both tough at the best of times, and unfortunately, our plane had its heater stuck on full blast, so we were roasting in there. The heat combined with our winter clothing that we cannot take off because we have parachutes on over top, combined with the roller coaster, got guys throwing up after about 20 minutes. It turned into the pie-eating contest in Stand By Me.
Oh, jeez.
I just stared at my hands for 2 hours. And was able to not puke. Well, that's what I've done for the last 15 years. So good job.
Just stare at your hands and not puke.
That's right.
I can't imagine that. 2 hours of hearing everybody around you puking and smelling it and all that stuff. And of course, feeling the heat and the roller coaster ride of the airplane and not puking. I think I'd be done.
Yeah.
I'd be done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gnarly. Says he finally went, his final note is this: that was my worst plane trip. On the plus side, I was never so happy to throw myself out of a plane into a blissfully cold air, says Jeff. I can't even imagine what a relief that must have been. Mm-hmm. Also, hats off just in general. This kind of shit, dude. I'm not kidding. Built for this. I can't do this.
It goes without saying you're a stronger man than we are, Jeff, and thank you for doing what you do.
I can't do it. I couldn't do what
he
did.
It was for the Canadian Army.
Oh, I'm sure that'll not make anybody mad.
Nobody will write in for that one. I'm kidding, of course. I have respect for all of the world's armies.
Yeah, all the armies are strong.
All the world's military, but, Canadians.
Yeah,
you know.
Canadians. We have to give you guys shit. That's our job.
We have to give you guys shit. It's just our job.
Yes, someone in the chat was confused as to whether we talked about OJ dying. Yes, we talked about pre-show.
That's about all we're gonna mention him.
Yeah, OJ did it. That's all you have to know. All right,
out of respect for we don't care, we're not gonna mention him any further.
Yeah. Although I got this question. Do you think he wrote like a note before he died that says,
you think there's somewhere like that we're going to discover in a vault or something, that little his confession saying, if something happens to me, I hope you find this message. Like, I basically want to make him Dr. Hibbert.
He'll be on his deathbed. They'll have his son will have a microphone on him and he'll go, before I go, I just want to admit that Naked Gun was my favorite role. And that's it. That's all he'll admit to.
I faked one of my touchdowns.
I love that you've made him into Hibbert. Why?
Yeah, I don't know. Because have you seen his videos on Twitter? I haven't seen him. Like, I haven't gone out and followed them myself, but they play him on Howard Stern all the time. Like, his goofy videos. Hey, it's me, OJ. Hey, Twitter Nation. And he basically does that Hibbert laugh.
Yeah, I found, actually, let's see what his last tweet was. Let's see if we can get one.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I don't feel so good.
I'm not doing great. Okay, here we go. This is one from his
just stated a Panera Bread.
His last tweet before the death tweet that his family posted today was February 11th, so it's been a little time. Mm-hmm. He says this. Well, let's play it.
To the day.
Here we go.
Hey, X-World, it's me, yours truly. Boy, what a beautiful day it is here in Las Vegas. Even though the game is indoors, it wouldn't have mattered, but still, it's nice to have a beautiful day like
this. So it's just him talking about the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. It's X-Nation now, not Twitter Nation. X-Nation. Yeah.
X-Nation, F that, dude. F it. Hey, Brian, tell me about the MS-150 and why is it back?
Woo! It's back. I mean, it's back because MS is still a thing. And listen, we're never going to cure MS, but we can prevent it. We can create ways of treating people who suffer from it and mitigating the nerve issues that come with having MS. My aunt suffers with those all the time. We've got a lot of people actually in the tadpool who suffer with MS. Mava, Mikey, can't remember his last name. But Mikey, there's quite a few. And this is a way that I can help support efforts to raise awareness, raise some money for MS research. And I'm doing it again. Mikey Newman. Thank you, TV's Travis. So if you go to tiny.cc/BikeCoverville2024, easy to remember. I use the same thing every year. I just change the year number. Then you can support $1, $5, $10, whatever. And I'm raising money for this ride. This ride, by the way, going to be at the end of June, June 24th and 25th, I believe. Holy crap, that's soon.
Yep.
Is 75 miles from Westminster up to Fort Collins, and then Sunday, 75 miles back from Fort Collins back to Westminster. Wasn't able to do the full ride last year. I did the 35 mile ride, the Fort Collins 35 mile ride, because I had the L4, L5 spine issue, or the back issue that I believe is good now. Been doing my stretches every night before bed. I put on Celebrity Jeopardy and I do my stretches while I answer questions in Celebrity Jeopardy, because it makes me feel good to get every answer correct.
Sure. Why not?
in that dumbed down version of regular Jeopardy. Getting prepared for that ride, going out, finally getting some weather again today, supposed to be in the mid to high 60s and all through until Monday. So rides every day, for the next 4 or 5 days, and then back to riding inside the house, after that.
Nice. And for those picturing Brian on a bike riding through rooms in the house, that is not what he means. He means like on a bike.
No, it is me projecting Apple TV Plus fitness and the perennially rosy, cheerful, effing, smiling spin class instructors, basically, that tell you, okay, well, we're listening to some Rihanna today, and now I want you to get a good pace going, about 60 to 70 RPM on your bike, and do some stretches. We're going to kind of ramp that up into an all-out and three hard level blah, blah, blahs, and yeah.
Those people remind me of what's his name on SNL that looks in the mirror and goes, people like me.
Stuart Smalley, yes.
Stuart Smalley,
I always think of McClurg, Edie McClurg in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles as the car rental desk clerk.
Yeah.
Hi there. Gobble,
hi,
gobble.
Gobble, gobble. Well, then you're effed, she says at the end.
Exactly.
Loved her.
Which is how I feel by the end of those 30 to 45-minute rides.
Well, that's great. Go get it, guys. tiny.cc/BikeCoverville2024. It's like last year's, except with a 4 at the end.
With a 4 at the end. Yeah.
It's not hard.
tiny.cc/BikeCoverville2024. And can I just say, it was less than 2 minutes of posting, like creating my tiny URL and getting it posted. I posted it on Facebook and in our Discord. Jeannie's getting it out to places. But within 2 or 3 minutes of me even creating the tiny URL, Dr. Tolbert, Jerry Tolbert, just the prince among men, made the first massive donation to the cause. So, Jerry, you're the best.
He's pretty
great.
You're
the best around. Mm-hmm. No one is ever going to let you down.
He's pretty great. He doesn't just remotely diagnose medical issues for us here on the show.
That's right. Yes.
He also puts his money where his mouth is, and his mouth right now is firmly on MS. So, thank you. That was not worded the best, but anyway, you're great. Yeah, we love you and everybody who is contributing. So go check it out. tiny.cc/BikeCoverville2024.
I was surprised, by the way, that he didn't correct me, or not correct me, but tell me, oh yeah, Brian, we moved from calling them STDs to STIs back in 2000 something something. But the same day that I was like, oh really, we call them STIs now instead of STDs, Jimmy Kimmel had the same joke on his show of like, I guess, you know, we call them STIs instead of STDs now, so because we want to confuse everybody anyway.
Yeah.
There's the super gonorrhea in China, blah blah blah.
Yeah, I didn't know about that either, for the record. So I mean, I don't never had an STD or an STI.
No.
I had a GTI Volkswagen Rabbit GTI once.
Oh yeah, yes, right.
I loved that car. But that's the one that got stolen by the drug addict who worked for my dad, and then my dad went and found him on the floor and saved his life. Remember that whole story? I've told that story before. That was that guy. I never got that car back. We saved his life. We didn't save the car. He sold it for drugs, we think, so it's fine. It's all, look, that was a long time ago, folks. I don't hold a grudge on that. And I think that guy's probably better off now. I don't actually know where he is, but all I know is it was the right thing for my dad to do at the time.
Well, absolutely. You don't still get a Christmas card every year like the protagonist in the Chuck Palahniuk book Choke.
No. I'd love that, though. Merry Christmas. Thanks again for your dad making sure I didn't die.
Yeah.
See you next year. All right. We got some news to do, and we're going to do it now. Today's news is brought to you by...
Brought to you by Coverville. Today, there will be a Coverville episode for Dave Perner. Dude is turning 60, and you know him as the lead singer for the band Soul Asylum. Finally, Brian gets out of doing these, like, old farts like Richard Thompson and Nick Lowe and Eric Carmen, Sly and the Family Stone. No, we're doing something, at least we've made it into the 90s, folks. Soul Asylum, you're probably familiar with things like Runaway Train, Black Gold, Somebody to Shove, and you'll hear covers of all of those, as well as some of the covers that Soul Asylum has done as well. Did you know they did a cover of Sexual Healing by Marvin Gaye?
No.
No? Well, you're going to hear it today.
Oh my gosh. That's a weird one, isn't it?
It is a weird one.
All right. We'll take it, though.
Wake up. Make love tonight.
Sexual healing.
You do it right.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got a... This one's funny. You know what? This one's for you, Dr. Tolbert. This one here.
Excellent.
The headline is, quote, mostly felt like a speed bump, says U.S. man on getting vasectomy amid the earthquake that happened last week.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. He was the...
I'd say you guys feel free to stop until this is over.
Yeah. Good. That's what I would say. I guess they didn't know what was going on, but he was in Jersey, New York area where they had that earthquake, and he says he was the one guy getting a vasectomy at the exact moment it hit, and this is what happened. Justin Allen from Horsham, Pennsylvania. That's where all the American vampires are stationed. That's their headquarters, is Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. This was an exact reality on Friday when the New York City metropolitan area and its outskirts were shaken by a 4.8 quake. The earthquake was centered near Lebanon, New Jersey, according to the U.S. Geological Survey, though people reported feeling its effects across New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania. He says, quote, I thought maybe a train was passing by or just something had happened in the office. And when the doctor was like, I think that's an earthquake, I figured he was messing with me. But he had to stop because everything was shaking.
Okay, good. He did stop. Thank goodness.
He says he put the tools down for a moment, he says.
Well, okay.
That's not long enough for me, but fine. You put him down for a moment.
Yeah.
Says, we talked about how we'd never forget where we were at that moment.
We'll always remember where we were during this shake, during the New Jersey earthquake.
We'll always have this vasectomy to remember.
You had your hands on my penis during the New Jersey earthquake.
That's right. According to the Mayo Clinic, many vasectomy procedures are done using local anesthesia, which means the patient will be awake and have a medicine to numb the surgical area. I think we all kind of knew that. If an earthquake during such a sensitive procedure concerned him, he showed pure bravery. I wasn't afraid at all. Says I was really worried, or I wasn't really worried because he had walked me through every step of the procedure. So I almost felt like a brief speed bump, and we were mostly just calm and laughing as the room shook. He explained. Well, it's a good thing this wasn't like that Taiwan earthquake. Thailand. Where was it?
I mean, that's
Thailand, right? Taiwan, maybe.
Oh shoot!
I don't know.
I can't. I'm not going to go one way or the other because I cannot remember for sure. And
Chat's saying Taiwan. I just don't remember.
Taiwan. Yeah.
I hope that was right. Okay. That earthquake was made in Taiwan. Anyway, it's not a good. Says, for now, everything turned out great. I feel about as good as I possibly can. When the numbing started to wear off, when the quake's impact seemed to have been minimal as of Friday morning, it's not like it's going to be something Alan will forget anytime soon. He fired off a tweet shortly after the quake was felt, sharing his inconvenient locale with the masses. It quickly went viral.
Mm, great.
That's what they do.
This interview took place while he was recovering from the numbness. This is moments after the surgery was completed, basically.
They jumped right on it, dude. They were like, you know what? This story's not gonna be here forever. So let's get our best people on it.
Let's get this guy's 15 minutes after his previous 15 minutes.
Perfect. Well, good luck to him, I'm sure it's okay after all that.
It was a very minor, like when I had mine done, it was such a minor deal. Like I said, the worst part of it was smelling the smoke from the cauterization of the vas deferens.
Yep. Kim had to have the female thing done, and because she had to do it. It was for other reasons. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh, well, this is good. This means I don't have to get the thing done. And she says, yeah, I guess it does. And I said, and this is the joke I keep bringing up, and she hates it. I go, and if the world ends tomorrow and they need somebody to help repopulate the human beings on this planet, I'll still have the goods to get it done. She always slaps me in the arm. Yeah. She's like, you're not doing that. Like, I doubt my count's very good these days anyway, if you know what I'm saying.
Right, yeah. Oh, I know exactly. No, that wasn't too much of a euphemism. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, you know exactly what I'm saying. Let's talk about this one. The world's oldest man says the secret to his longevity is luck. Mm. Plus regular fish and chips.
All right. Okay.
Yep. World's oldest
luck
man.
And fish and chips.
That's right. He says, is luck, moderation, which they didn't put in the headline, and fish and chips every Friday. This is Englishman John Alfred Tenniswood.
Tenniswood.
I love that. Sounds like a special golf club I can only use in a certain way.
That's right, exactly, yes. Oh, Caddy, can you hand me my tennis wood, please? I need to get out of this patchy.
That's a great name. He's 111. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
He has, has been confirmed as the new holder of the title by Guinness World Records. It follows the death of the Venezuelan record holder Juan Vicente Perez. This month, died at the age of 114. Mm. Ginzaburo Sonobi from Japan, who is also the next longest lived, died March 31st, so just recently at 112.
Man, how are all these record holders dying? What do you think is the cause?
You know what? Vaccines? It's a vaccine.
The vaccine, man.
Vaxxed? ? Hashtag vaccine. I hate when people do that so much.
Yeah.
Some of them do it as a joke, and those I can respect, but everybody else who does it, unironically.
I can't remember where the joke was. I think, was it, it was like somebody made the joke of, God, you hear the world's oldest man died at the age of 114? Oh, no, how did he die?
I love it. I love it. Yeah. It's like, what are they going to say? Oh, it was a brief battle with
motorcycle accident. Yeah. It's terrible. Yeah.
Actually, if I was 114 and somebody said, oh, his breathing is dropping, whatever, I'm like, quick, get me on a motorcycle. I'm going to drive this off a cliff.
I don't want this chalked up to old age. I want this to be he died how he lived.
Yeah.
On a motorcycle careening into the Grand Canyon.
Exactly. Even if it wasn't really the way I died. I love that idea. Do that for me, everybody. Brian, real quick, I have an update. This is from the other day. We were talking about the eclipse and the Google searches. Everybody trying to now we have some visual data. Check out this map.
I know
the purple for those. So this is much more visual. The purple is people searching for my eyes hurt on that day. And it also happens to be the exact stripe and solar path of the eclipse for the most intense version of the eclipse. So
I mean, you cannot have more evidence of of idiots looking at the sun. And it's funny because the Google search, I guess they just have to give you a week, right? Google search volume. It really, there probably wasn't a whole lot of searching for eyes hurt from April 3rd to April 7th.
Correct.
It was all April 8th and after. Mm-hmm. And they were saying actually that in the places where there's totality, you can, that is the one time you can actually look directly at the sun without eye protection, but only for like a few seconds. And then you better be wearing eye protection when the sun starts coming out from around the other
side. So right when it's at its full corona, like
yeah, that's the one time they're saying it's safe for you to do it for that little brief moment.
My neighbor was in somewhere south. He went south and he got a shot with his eye. I couldn't believe it was just his freaking iPhone. Oh, I wish I had that. I'll ask him to text it. Maybe he can do it before the show's over. But basically, he's got a dead-on shot of the corona, and you can see on the outside little jumping flames from the sun behind it.
Yeah.
Like little arcs and stuff. What do they call those? Flares, solar flares? Just little all the way around, like little hairs. It's so cool. With his iPhone. Yeah. Freaking iPhone.
With his iPhone, he was getting it.
Yeah. Pretty good. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, so right from NASA, during a total solar eclipse, except during the brief total phase of a total solar eclipse, when the moon completely blocks the sun's bright face, it is not safe to look directly at the sun without specialized eye protection for solar viewing. So except during the brief total phase of the total solar eclipse. So,
yeah,
which I don't know how long that actually lasts, but sure. It's probably, and that's probably, you know, the news saying that or NASA saying that or whoever saying that is probably... what, you know, people will say like, well, it was kind of partially, but it still really stung my eyes. Like, well, yeah, you looked at it during the phase where it was starting to come around from the other side. So maybe you just tell everybody because they're idiots, always wear glasses.
Yeah. Amish Overlord says they're not solar flares. What are they? They called something else. I thought they were solar flares on the edges.
Oh, really?
Isn't that what those little hairs are? Not hairs, but little jumping, leaping, flame looking things. I don't know what they are. Anyway, someone will clear that up. Bobby's here. He'll look it up.
Sun flames.
Flaming sun. Sounds like a drink.
That's right. The suns and the flames.
I'll have a flaming sun and make it a double, is what they say.
There you go.
Let's move on to this story. Oh, so anyway, that guy's...
Chris says technically they're called solar hairs. Get out.
Shut up.
You've got to be pulling our
He's leg. Making that up. He has to be, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I don't believe him. Yeah, mass ejections. That's not it.
okay, good. Chris is just kidding. Yeah, we thought so. That looked like bullshit.
Yeah, sounds like bullshit. He says this. By the way, I forgot to mention this. This guy was born in 1912. That makes him just a few months... shy of the sinking of the Titanic when he was born, just a few days after it sank. He lived through two world wars, serving in the British Army Pay Corps in the World War II, in the big war there. Which was the Great War? Was World War I the Great War, or was that the war to end all wars?
I mean, were any of them great, Scott?
I mean, they were
if
none
I'm being
of them.
Honest, I give them each like a 2, maybe a 3 on Yelp, max.
Yeah.
The service was horrible.
Coronal mass ejections are real. Okay. That's the thing, Caduce says.
Coronal mass ejections, CME. Oh, yeah, you know, your CME, Scott.
Oh, your CME. Oh, your regular old CME.
Sure, your CME.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty much your basic CME.
Right.
Yeah.
Your clotted monkey erection.
Yes.
Let's move on to, and then I was going to say he retired. He was an accountant. He's a great grandfather. He says the fish and chips are the thing that does it. So. My guess is none of this does it. He's just an outlier. That's what I'm going to say. These people that live forever, that live a really long time, everyone thinks there's some magic trick to it. There never is. It's just an outlier. That's the whole point. If it was fish and chips, there are a bunch of British people that would have lived longer than they did if they ate fish and chips every Friday. He's an outlier. That's all it is.
He's an outlier. Exactly. It's still fried food. It's still probably not the best for you, but
so there you have it. He's still alive, so good luck to him.
But I love me some good fish and chips, so I'm gonna take his advice, even though I know it's fraudulent.
It's true. Sierra Leone has declared emergency after addicts have dug up graves to get high on drugs made from human bones.
Oh no.
Yeah, this one's weird. A psychoactive drug crafter from human bones is leaving addicts in the Western African country of Sierra Leone digging up graves in order to get their fix. This is according to the BBC. That's the British Broadcasting Corporation or company. What is it? I don't know which one.
I don't know.
The haunting haunting menace has forced Sierra Leone to declare a national emergency. Police officers in Freetown are guarding cemeteries to thwart the disturbing practice of exhuming skeletons for the zombie drug production. Zombies in quotes, I guess they call it that. Notably, the drug dubbed Kush is made from a variety of toxic substances, and one of its main ingredients being ground up human bone.
There's, you know, sorry guys, there's already a drug with the nickname Kush, so you guys need to come up with something new.
Yeah, what is Kush? Kush
is a variant of marijuana, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm going to look it up.
Or a strain.
Kush cannabis. So you're right. It's a variation or something.
Yeah, a strain.
Here we go.
Like sativa, or is it just a nickname for it? Like, we're going to go home and smoke some Kush.
Here it is. Spend too much time shopping for cannabis strains or products, you will find names like Kush. Kush is one of several building block strains that have been used to breed an entire family of strains and hybrid cannabises. Let's see, where does the strain come from? What is Kush? Scanning some of the most picturesque areas of Afghanistan. Okay, so it's like primal weed. Mm-hmm. It's like a early, more primal form of weed.
Like your Neanderthal weed? Is that what we're looking at here?
Yeah. I'm sure this is probably powerful. OG Kush.
You're still talking about the marijuana. The bone Kush.
Bubba Kush. You want some Bubba Kush? Check this out, Bubba Brian. Kush.
Oh, another. Kelly says it's a strain of, I'm sorry, it's a family of strains.
Yeah.
I don't know. How does Tally
Red on Air Light for Tally. Sure. Tally, we already said, I read the thing she said. So she's late to the party here.
Oh, I thought we were saying it was a strain, but she was correcting that it's a family of strains.
Yeah, that's what I read that earlier.
Did you actually just say that?
Yeah.
It's a family of strains?
Yeah. Okay. But it doesn't.
I'll join Tally in that Red on Air Light because I was.
let's see. BioCal says Kush is real good. Is it now? Is it BioCal?
He's just singing Kush it real good.
Yeah. Bubba Kush is another highly popular Kush strain available, crafted by a grower named Matt Bubba Berger from some Northern Lights seeds of Kush plant. The strain was a major hit in the 90s in Los Angeles and sparked what High Times describes as the Kush craze. Bubba Kush!
Bubba Kush!
I love that, dude. That's freaking amazing. Well, geez, Tally, calm, easy now.
Yeah.
I got to quit looking at the chat and they kill me every day. All right, moving on to this story. What time is it? Oh, we got time for one more here.
One more? Good. Let's get one more here.
Don't be snorting bones, though. Human bones is bad.
Yeah, exactly. That seems like it's a weird late time to discover that you can get high from crushing up human bones. Like, how has this not been found before? How has nobody figured out that you can exhume a body, crush the bones, do something else to them, and then have a drug?
Yeah. I guess this probably is just like a filler, right? Like, what else would the bones do or act as? And why couldn't you find another filler, like dirt or cement or... Well, it's like bone. I guess you can't consume those other things. You'd have to have something you can consume that your body can process, and the human bone could be potentially in the right form. You could eat it. Just like animal bones. I'll eat me a little bone here and there.
Yeah.
It's good. Like the inside of a bone's okay. And if you chew a bone up, like dogs eat bones. They don't die, you know. Well, they eat chicken bones.
Some bones, you can't give them. There's certain kinds of bones you can't give them. But,
so chicken bones, bird bones of any kind, right? That's what I've been told to avoid with dogs.
Yeah. Chicken bones, splinter. What was the other one you said?
It's
any sort of poultry bone is bad. Turkey bones.
Those are all bad. But if you do beef, you're okay, right? A little beef?
I think beef bones are good. Or beef bones are okay, yeah.
Okay. Well, I could go for a steak right now. I really could. That sounds amazing.
Did Kim make a big old bowl of jambalaya for her? A pot of jambalaya?
She left us all the ingredients, so Carter and I just have to figure it out and make it. She was going to make it. She ran out of time, got busy. We had a soccer game last night.
I trust that Carter will make this happen.
Yeah, she'll do great. It's all vegetarian, too, so she'll be able to enjoy it. We're going to have a great time.
Excellent. Thanks.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, my sister, Wendy, will join the fray. And we got somebody who wrote in about their whole scapegoat thing. So apparently they sent it before, but it went to spam. So I appreciate them resending it. I don't know why it went to spam. I mean, this person used the word, let's see.
Oh, I see Nigerian prince.
That's why.
Probably what happened.
Yeah, you shouldn't have done that part where it said P.S. Nigerian prince. That was bad. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's coming up after this break. Brian, to break, we need a song. So I guess you'll have to provide that.
And a quick clarification, iMac Head says that dogs can eat raw chicken bones. So it's the cooked ones that splinter and can cause problems. But iMac Head...
raw chicken bones. When would you have that?
Yeah, so like if you're cutting a chicken up like to part it out to, you know, make some boneless chicken meal and you have those bones before they get, because those won't be brittle enough to just cause splinters and cause problems.
Because they get brittle when you cook them, right?
Yeah.
That was the idea. Right. Okay. Right. No, I had no idea. That's we do that all the time and just throw it away. We thought you couldn't.
Play it safe. Get your milk bones. This episode of TMS brought to you by Milk Bones.
Excellent. Milk bones are here for you.com.
Which do nothing. Hey, how about a brand new single from a brand new artist? This is from the UK. This is a singer by the name of Beren Olivia, and it's B-E-R-E-N. So neither of those vowels in the way that you might think Beren is spelled. B-E-R-E-N Olivia. This is a brand new single. It's called She'll Be Dancing. She has got some other singles, Almost, Wake Me Up and Drown It in Gray. Honestly, read that first as drowned in gravy. Maybe I am hungry. I don't know. Anyway, Beren Olivia, she's been around since 2020, and this is her brand new single. Check it out. Here is She'll Be Dancing.
Dancing in my room like nobody ever hurt you. Abandon all the pieces of you for a minute or two. Laughing like you do, like the day was lying to you. Running out of feelings to feel tonight, with tears in her eyes. Before you know, she'll be dead.
Yeah. Are you 5 years old that you can't hold your water?
Goodbye, young human. I hope you live.
And we're back. Who is that again?
Yeah, that's Baron Olivia. B-E-R-E-N Olivia from a brand new single called She'll Be Dancing. And don't worry, folks. You heard pop there for Indie in the Middle. Wait till we get to some metal for the end of show song.
Ooh. So,
always trying to provide a variety for you guys.
That's right. That
Baron Olivia and She'll Be Dancing.
Yesterday's Ender, I think it was. Yesterday's cover.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
oh, yeah. The Sunday
good.
Bloody Sunday, that EDM... I guess it's more electronic than EDM, but yeah, that Electron Love Theory, that whole album is so good.
I got to get that whole thing because that was awesome. I love that track. Yeah. Amazing stuff. All right, we're going to call Wendy. I see that she is not answering.
No.
But you know how it goes. Sometimes she's just a little slow to the...
She's getting to the phone. She's taking the dog out or something. And she's getting there.
Yeah, and we're not really a professional effort here. We just kind of wing it every day. It's not like, mm-hmm. you know, we don't have standards. Really? Not really.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as she gets here, we'll get that going. And big thanks to everybody who, since she asked for it, has been sending in emails about this. But we're definitely going to do this one, given that they waited an extra week.
Yeah. No, it's in something that we asked people to... submit their own feedback about. So this is great.
That's right. She no pick up. Let me try texting her.
Okay.
I give her a text.
Anything. God, you're lucky. That's
yeah,
nice.
I would love that. I don't want to do anything. Oh, listen to that. I heard the throat clear. Hold on. We got to play this right here. Where is it?
Here's another Minnesota tradition that's not so easy to throw in the garbage.
Hello, Wendy. Welcome back to the show for Therapy Thursday. How are you?
Hi, good. Can you hear me?
Oh, you sound like you're
a very different mic. You're definitely on a
like you're a room mic. You almost sound like you're a room away or something.
It's because, you know, it's hooked to my phone and I can't find my phone.
You're like, oh, that's what it is. we're on your phone. So that's good news.
Your phone and you don't know where your phone is.
Yeah.
How can I be that far away from it?
Here's that's the good so news, stupid. Wendy. The phone is somewhere near you because we can hear you.
Should we? Oh, gosh.
So if you can hear that, that means it's on the table.
It's got to be somewhere like it's far enough from your voice that it feels like it's at least it's at least 5-6 feet away from you, though.
Yeah, maybe. All right, so maybe keep talking. We'll tell you when you're getting louder or quieter, and we'll
you sound
echolocate. We'll echolocate your phone to you.
You sound further right now.
Okay, good. That means that I'm going to get back to this room.
Yep, you're definitely coming closer now.
Yeah.
Guys, what is happening right now?
We're getting closer.
There's not that many places for it to go.
Just for the record, Wendy's the most organized person I've ever known in my life. And that's the truth.
It sounded like it. It sounds like this thing might be buried under three pots, a phone book, and a...
You guys, all you needed to say was buried. It was in the drawer.
It was in the drawer?
There we go. It was in the drawer. It was in the drawer the whole time.
Oh, my gosh. I've never put a phone in a drawer that I'm aware of. Maybe I'd have. Yeah. I don't know. Terrible. Where are you on that same mic, or where are you now? Where are you talking into?
Now you're like calling from Kandahar. Because
double tap what you think is the microphone. Yeah, I don't hear it, so I think you're on.
Anything. Yeah.
Yeah, it's still not. Oh,
how's that?
Say something again. Yeah. Let's see it again.
Hi, how's it going?
That's better.
It was way better. Yeah, I think now you're on the microphone. You think you're on Discord's just Seriously, taking a minute to figure things out.
I will solve this before next time. I apologize.
It's all good.
Sure.
I think that made for some fun content.
Yes, until then you call and I'm like, crap. Yeah. I'll not fix that.
It's all good. We're going to make you a scapegoat. Get it? It's part of today's theme.
Clever.
Very clever. Wendy, of course, here every Thursday to do some therapy. She is an actual therapist, and we're all just a bunch of schlubs getting help for free. And we're excited to see you in Vegas in a couple of weeks. Very exciting.
Yeah.
Misha kind of forgot that that's what we were doing. It was so funny because we were talking to her about lunch or something. No, something with... a get together, and she calls Kim and goes, yeah, so we're doing it on this night. And Wendy or Kim goes, Misha, we're going to be in Vegas that weekend, and so are you. And she's like, oh, Oh, I forgot.
So you are having a meetup, but it's not going to be at the place you think it is.
It's going to be in Vegas.
Or in the state you think it is.
Yep. She giggled pretty hard, which you know how great Misha is when she laughs. It's a hilarious thing.
I know. I love it so much.
It's like ASMR for our family. Anyway, let's get to this thing. Really? We'd asked for somebody who felt like they were kind of a scapegoat in their family situation. Yeah. And we got somebody who actually wrote when you asked them to, but the thing got lost in spam and I got a new version of it. So we are going to read that one. This is from somebody we'll call Style. And here's what they say. Scott, Brian, and Wendy, my youngest brother was always the scapegoat growing up. I am the middle of three boys, and my youngest brother is 6 years younger than I am. The older brother was the genius, and I was the athlete. I love these labels. Everyone gets them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
While we definitely had our...
Breakfast Club.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't even think of that, but that is so. We're just missing a couple here, but we got Breakfast Club.
We need the basket case. We need the princess. We need
Who's the other one? The nerd? Oh no, he was the genius.
The nerd. Yeah, he was the genius. The rebel or the troublemaker. The
bender. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody needs a bender. Anyway, while we definitely had our instances of screw ups, my younger brother definitely bore the brunt of failing in our shadow or falling in our shadow. At the same time, he wore the mantle of youngest and therefore perennially the baby. Well, very well and still does. A strange thing happened when he graduated high school and continued screwing up in college and beyond. My parents started blaming my brother and me for his shortcomings. He was no... Boy, this is a compounding
no kidding.
Version of this. He says, let's see, he was no longer the scapegoat. My parents turned their attention to him and began coddling him, making excuses for him, trumping up his achievements, etc. It was a strange time being a grown adult and having my parents tell me that I should do more to help him, even though he lived hundreds of miles away and never really listened to me anyway. My older brother and I still marvel over how they fawn over him. Anyway, a longer answer than you probably wanted. Bottom line, my younger brother or youngest brother was the scapegoat growing up. Sounds like maybe they are now. Signed Style. So that's an interesting reply because it's got layers. But does that give you what you need to take us down the path? All right.
Wow. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, the redirection is a very interesting aspect of this. Like basically saying, all right, now we think his problems are because of you two.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very weird. All right. What do you want to how do you want to do it?
So let's just start with the fundamental honest and easy to understand impulse parents have with over identifying with their children's behavior, accomplishments, status, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not till the first time you taste that thing of like someone says your kid's awesome at something or you get vicarious praise. This is why, you know, we are real harsh towards parents and we blame them for things like, oh, we're not gonna talk about this, but you know, that shooter whose parents are now being sentenced to prison.
Oh, liable for his. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great example of like, well, it's their fault. And we're real quick to do that. So when the opposite happens, like, oh, I get the credit for how wonderful my child is or their grades or whatever that thing. It's a really alluring experience, I think, because parenting's hard work and there's a lot of time, effort, money, sacrifice that goes into it. And so a kid that makes you look good and feel good feels great. So we often have golden children, right? So we're all familiar with that term, right? This is the kid that does no wrong.
Yep.
And when we really break down a golden child, sometimes what we find is the golden child has either two tendencies. One is really works hard to kind of help manage the family's emotions. And then sometimes they don't try at all. They just accomplish a lot. And that accomplishment is enough to make the family feel, or the parents feel like they're good parents. Right.
Yeah.
So you might have like an oldest daughter is a very common, golden child that actually has a lot of labor that they do in a family. And so they're making everyone look good and getting perfect grades and all that, and that can really switch later. So this switch is actually really interesting because it's not uncommon for a switch to occur if you stop playing a certain role. So golden children can lose their golden status. Scapegoats, interestingly, usually don't get to choose. So this kid got
the brother got away with something here. Yeah. Okay, so let's just define what scapegoating is, right? Do you guys familiar with the biblical story? It's kind of the original use of these two words.
No, I didn't. I was always wondering where it came from. I always just assumed there was just a goat who was kind of a pud in the group, and
it was a goat in the village that got blamed for everything.
Yeah, right. Maybe it's close to that. I don't know.
Yeah, it starts with essentially like, I'm trying to remember, I looked it up because I couldn't remember exactly, but the idea that the culture, the whole group in the Old Testament, so let's see, where it was. Anyway, but the idea was that you would sacrifice a goat during a holiday. It's in the Hebrew Bible. Oh, so Book of Leviticus there was. Okay. So during this celebration, you would sacrifice a goat. And by throwing it off, you know, the cliff or something, and they symbolically would have all the sins of the community upon it, right? Mm-hmm. It was this day of, you know, essentially we are free from the guilt of the things we've all been doing, and we're putting it all onto this goat that got chucked over a cliff.
Right.
Or later, you know, the throat was slit and, you know, the blood and all that stuff, right? So that concept is that goat was the scapegoat. And it comes from some other word, I forget. Anyway, but at some point in like the early 1900s, some researchers and social scientists and stuff started using that term of scapegoating to connect it to lots of bigger things.
Right.
So we have a couple of, and it's pretty early on, like 1920, you know, so it's been around for a minute. But this idea, there's a couple different versions of it. So there's one-on-one, which is like one person blaming another for something that they did. So this, you might see this maybe like a child blaming a sibling or a friend for something that they did in order to avoid getting in trouble or avoid the shame or disappointing their parents, right? So one-on-one. Then you have the one-on-group. Some of these are going to sound familiar as we keep going. The one-on-group type of scapegoating is where one person blames an entire group, Hitler, for a problem that they did not cause, or, you know, that kind of thing. So this can obviously escalates, you know, war, death, all those kinds of things that are very problematic. Okay. And then scapegoating can also be group on one. And this is kind of where a family, maybe you would consider a family dynamic, but a group of people single out and blame one person for the problem.
Yeah.
And so that may be, you know, the baskets missed in the last few minutes of the game, and it's that person's fault when really everyone else missed baskets throughout the game.
Yeah. Just because that first guy did it.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. He just did it the wrong time. And then it could be group on group. So that's really where your racial tension or your
political tension,
parties, that kind of thing. Blaming whole groups of people for whatever is going on. Right.
Right. Right.
Okay. And so essentially, we'll just give a nice Freud definition. It's where you're displacing your own stuff or even your hostility just onto, you know, an acceptable target, but you hold it against an unacceptable target. So, for example, your parents or your boss have a lot of power, right? And so you can't just direct that onto them. Even though you're feeling like you're failing or you're not measuring up or you're going to get fired or whatever, and you would not go scream at them, but what would you do? Well, you take it out while you're driving or kick the dog or whatever those kinds of things, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So there's kind of the basic of it. And so when you put this in a family context, you can see how problematic this gets, right? So a family scapegoat essentially is just like the family's projection onto one person, and the projection is the responsibility for any unresolved problems, any weird dynamics. So I see this a lot in terms of couples with infidelity, and this isn't always the case. Alcoholism is a really common place where this will happen. So the parents are struggling with addiction, or the parents are struggling with infidelity, or really bad communication, or other toxic behaviors. And where does all of that shame, guilt, anger, you know, where does it go?
Yeah.
And so real quick, where do you think it would go? Scapegoating obviously is where I'm leading here, but where else could that go? What else would happen?
Well, like, okay, so give me a scenario where I'd have to answer that. Like if
you've got a family problem that would.
Yeah. Let's say you got a really rebellious black sheep in the family And so therefore, all our problems stem from them. They are the scapegoat. We are going to put it all on them. Is that an acceptable version of this story?
Well, so well, hold
aside
on.
Aside from scapegoating. So,
yeah. So, and really quick, why is this kid rebelling?
Right.
And so that's the original question that might, be, so let's do that. There's some infidelity. Okay.
Okay.
Somebody, okay. Mom stepped out on dad and now they're keeping it low key. No one gets to know. And we're just going to plow through here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then what do you do with that kind of,
who should be the scapegoat there? You're saying?
No, just what do you do with it?
What do you do
if
with it?
Kim was cheating on with you. What would you do?
What would I do?
Dox the hell out of that guy.
I don't know what I'd do.
You'd ruin him.
I don't know. I don't know what I'd do.
So with regard, you're talking about like with regard to the kids, or the relationship. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Do you mean I'm blaming it on the person I hadn't had the affair with? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Okay, so here's Kim. Yeah, I'm.
Or that she had the affair with, right? Right.
Wait, what?
I meant the other way. So if she's having the affair, am I using that guy that she had the affair with as the scapegoat in this case? I'm putting it on him.
No, it would be like this. What would be healthy? Why, you guys, what's the healthy answer to this question?
why don't you just tell us what you want us to say?
It's not who should I scapegoat. No. The answer is you deal with it, right? The answer is you get help. Like you're the alcoholic. Kim cheated on you. We got two major problems that come from lots of sources. They need exploring. They need healing. You need to work this out, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Honesty, communication, all those things. That would be the healthy version. Then it doesn't need to go anywhere.
Right.
But when it doesn't get treated, nobody gets help. It all gets put in boxes.
That's what you're saying. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I didn't know.
For whatever reason, I was thinking therapy was coming later in the results. Like what is the human's natural tendency to do when these things happen?
Yes. As opposed to right. That is what I'm getting at too. Yeah. But right. I realize we should start with healthy first. Okay. Yeah. So that's the healthy.
Here's a book on Norm.
It's like Bruce Willis's character was dead the whole movie. Done. All right. Goodbye, Wendy. Yeah. Just kidding. All right. Go ahead.
Hi. Good to see you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I was not communicating that well. If you think of what people don't do, well, they don't go get the help. And where does that stuff go? So often when I'm talking to people, we'll go a little bit into their family history if they know about any, and we can go back a couple generations and everyone will say something similar. They'll say, well, my great grandfather was really bad at this. And then we've gotten more mellow through the generations, but I'm finding I still struggle with that anger, right? Mm. So I don't beat my children like my great grandpa did, but we had his children, then raised children, then raised children, then raised children. And so everyone does a little bit better, but maybe no one ever really dealt with how harmful that was to experience and then how that infected their parenting, right? So the buck stops with you because you're the current one alive. And so you have all these hard things happen and then you get a kid. And this is not 100% of the time, but very often I find that the scapegoat is just the most honest participant so that's not the only case. And I don't know about our emailer if that's exactly the case, but sometimes the most honest member of the family, meaning they are the truth teller. They just sort of publicly say, our family's not like that. They're not following maybe the rules of things. So Scott, we have a scapegoat in our family. Her name was Tara.
Yeah.
Right?
She got scapegoated constantly.
I don't know if there was any massive family dysfunction that was projected onto her. She sure showed a lot of things that made all of us, she was easy to be the scapegoat.
Yeah, very, me, very, very easy target for sure. Yeah.
Very hard to deal with and different things like that. And so I think our parents did a pretty good job trying to deal with it and getting therapy for whoever needed it and helping. And, you know, but the reality is she took a lot of time and energy. Right. And so I'm looking at this email and I'm thinking, okay, so here's this younger brother who was just, screwing up. So there was a genius and an athlete. So what is it? What's the definition of a screw up? Those are strong words.
They are
right?
Very strong words. Very blankety too. Right?
Well, and it also makes you feel like you have no control over it as that person, as the person labeled as the screw up. You know, like you feel like you're condemned to be that forever going forward.
Yeah, even the positive labels growing up, those stick in a way that aren't always positive. It's like, okay, enough with I'm the creative one. Enough you're the smart
Boy Scout
one.
Of the family. It's like, oh, I don't necessarily want to be the forever be the Boy Scout.
Yeah, that was Misha.
I was the only child, so I got every label.
You got all the labels.
I know.
And I could not shift any of them. I got all the blame, and I got every single label.
He's like, Brian, you smart jerk. And you're they'd say
exactly, and you're the cause of all our problems.
Yeah,
right. We're going to put it on your shoulders and also make us proud because you do make us proud. Yeah. So that, exactly. that really deep need to please your parents is really strong. So you take three boys clearly with three different strengths and there is some comparing going on. So always, the genius means you never have to help him with his homework, right? So look how easy that is. Or the athlete means you get to go to these fun games and see your kid excel and feel good and other parents want to be you or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other kid's probably just like doing whatevs. And it's just not those two things.
It doesn't live up to either of the,
Yeah. Maybe it'd be different, right? So there is the sort of setup. And here's the thing that's happening. The two boys getting attention is parental acceptance and feels like love, right? Mm-hmm. That's why this final sentence of my older brother and I still marvel how they fawn over him. They were raised in a certain watching this brother not get the good stuff they were getting because they were earning it.
Right.
And this other kid was not earning it.
Right.
Right. And then they graduate. And as things, you know, now parents have flipped their attention is him, make excuses because they are now having an adult child that doesn't make them look as good, and they've just switched a tactic. So now it's their fault that their brother isn't doing better, probably because the scapegoat at some point said, hey, you always made me feel like crap, and my brothers made them feel better. So who do we blame? We don't blame mom and dad. Not them. They didn't do it. Mm-hmm. We're going to blame the brothers for being so capable. Whew.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you think there's a big factor here with the age range, like the 6-year difference? Does that make a difference? Like, because you've got this final kid. He's a lot younger than the rest of you. 6 years is a lot when you're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it's just like they're an easy target. And unless they really blow everybody's mind, it's like you just can't. I don't know how you win if you're the young one.
Right.
You know?
Right. Because you and the older two brothers had a lot of time to achieve. You know, to impress the parents and be the jock, be the genius. And the youngest, the 6-year younger brother just hasn't had that opportunity yet.
Right.
Right. So he's always behind, always trying. And yet, you know, might just be a really different kid. Right. Mm-hmm. So athlete, genius, what's the third category mom and dad would have thought was great. And could that kid have gotten there? Well, maybe not. You don't know. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So here, let me just go briefly through how a child can be chosen as the family scapegoat is sometimes there. I mean, kind of if we look at like categorically, a parent may find a fault in a child that maybe isn't very capable at school, right? So if they're not as smart as a sibling or just not as smart as the family would like them to be, or they don't help out in sort of that way, then they may be chosen as the scapegoat. So their appearance. So a child may just be cuter, right? Mm-hmm. Or not. And then, I mean, it sounds so superficial, right? You're like, what? But sometimes that's part of it. And again, if you think of just like the accolades, oh, that's, you're the pretty one. How many of our unfair. Lady friends are listening to this and hearing, oh yeah, my sister was the pretty one.
Yeah.
I've heard that.
Nothing you feel like you can do about that sort of thing.
No. Okay. Then the reminder of this, you know, this, whoever this child is, it reminds of us of previous scapegoats. So maybe that one uncle, you know, or the parent, maybe there's a parent conflict in the relationship and it reminds you of that thing you can't stand about your husband or wife, or maybe there's a divorce and, oh, you remind me of them, you know? So sometimes that scapegoatism can just be that you're more similar to a previous scapegoat. So behavior, I think Tarek definitely was in this category of just making lots of mistakes, getting in lots of trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. It was easy, then, too, to, I mean, I'll admit to this. When she was doing that, when she was at her high point of doing that, it felt like it was also some pretty good cover, some good screen cover for the rest of us. Even nobody was doing anything bad, but like if we, it was easy to go, well, I may have gotten an F, but she's doing way worse. I'm not her. I'm not that bad. You know what I mean?
Right.
I definitely felt that growing up with her.
Right. Yeah, she, and that's a really good definition of a scapegoat. Yeah. She gave cover for the rest of us to just be ourselves a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we, it's hard, really hard to, it's easy to please parents where one kid is behaving so badly, right?
Yeah.
Versus a family of seven where everyone are concert pianists, right? Like, oof, no, those are parents that are hard to please.
Yeah.
Okay. Another one that might be how a scapegoat is chosen is just the parent's anxiety, right? Feeling unable to be a good parent.
Sure.
And sometimes they give up trying and it's the kid's fault kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Illness or just kind of a sick mentally or physically child can lead to the stigma that makes them sort of chosen as the scapegoat. And then a desire to protect others. You know, these kids who maybe want to protect other kids can be scapegoated. So that's kind of the person who stands up to the bully and then everyone bullies them or some version of that. Right. And this is kind of my thing about the truth tellers. So, you know, I worked with a family for a long time and they're, you know, starting with this kid when he was like 16 all the way till he was 30, kind of off and on through the years. And he was the designated scapegoat. He was very bright, but he would just bluntly describe the family secrets and, you know, demand improvement in how everyone interacted in ways that just made everyone want to scream.
I'll bet.
Right. Oh, and so rather than figuring it all out as a family and hearing him out, he just got louder and harder. And usually when your scapegoat starts, you know, screaming family secrets as teenagers, that's really difficult, right? And so it's hard to be like, you know what? I think we all need to take a good look at ourselves. Instead, we're going to just see this person as the family rebel. So you could see this in office settings. As I said that, I was like, oh, you could see that in an office setting, right? Where the whistleblower or the truth teller or the person who's just not doing the right things to get along can just have all the negative feelings, you know, placed on them. So
right. Yeah. Right.
Maybe you guys have seen that before.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you see it. I don't know. It's funny. When you get to be an adult, you see this stuff all the time. Things were easy when you were a kid. It was like, well, that kid smells funny, so we're not hanging around him. that kid cries a lot or, you know, whatever. We've really blankety decisions are based on real simple outward things. And now it's like, it's so much more complicated now. It's just like, on the one hand, they're awesome for this and this and this. On the other hand, boy, I sure wish they'd quit doing that little tiny thing they do. It drives me crazy. But, you know, and then we try to live with who we're going to live with or whatever. Scapegoating was easier when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Because you just say, oh, it's Billy's fault. Done. I'm out. See you later. Now it's like, well, a little more complicated. Maybe.
Yeah, totally. And that's just because our brains develop and... And it feels really good to not feel blame. And so that is where, or really take a hard look at ourselves. And so this is where, you know, your classic projection comes in. You know, unresolved issues in a family, it's just easier to project it onto something else rather than really deal with it. So let me just say a couple more things about the actual scapegoat. Because I just want anyone who feels like they've been scapegoated in their family or is the golden child, maybe look around, see who might be scapegoated. And sometimes those, especially as adults, there's some repair that can happen, which is going to lead to my advice for this person at the end here. Just really quick with this brother, imagine going from scapegoat to golden child. That's got to feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And be defended. And
unless he sees what it's doing to his other two brothers, you know, like then there's the guilt of that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, great. Now I'm the golden child, but now the other two brothers are getting
knows what it's like to. Yeah. Yeah. Right. 100%. Right. So I wish that detail was in there. Like, and maybe because the pitting each other against one another has seems to be a little bit successful. And so maybe those communications in that relationship isn't that good in order to talk it through and come to that.
Right. Point. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Good point.
Okay. So real quick, the seven signs, I'm going to go through a couple of just dumb facts because you're going to let me. Seven signs.
Always
let me. Just let me. Just hang up if you need to. So the seven signs of the family scapegoat is this. It can be. They're not like all of them, but just constantly feeling ignored.
Yeah.
Just sort of like not getting the time or being treated the same as your siblings. Always being cast in a negative light. So just whatever you do is kind of interpreted as negative or bad.
Yeah.
It's something good is kind of like, right. Well, you got lucky, that kind of stuff. And then justifying the situation. So like a parent, a parent has a child that's being scapegoated. The parent might just justify this behavior and find excuses. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Past mistakes or poor behavior or, well, they just could never pay attention or whatever it might be, right?
Yeah.
And then triangulation. We've talked about this maybe a little bit before, but just to remind you, triangulation is where a third person is brought into a relationship to stabilize the other two. And that is a terrible place to be.
Yeah.
So it's the peacemaker that comes in to decrease the tension that exists between mom and dad. So that's triangulation. You can see that in families where they're not dealing with their dysfunction. It's a way to keep stability is have a kid play that role. Or, you know, between siblings, it could be another sibling, that kind of thing. So manipulation, you can find it there. Successes aren't recognized. And sometimes there's gaslighting that happens there. And then this has this bad effect on the scapegoater, as you can imagine, scapegoatee.
Scapegoatee. I like it.
Scapegoatee. Blame everything on my beard.
Mm. Yeah. You can find self-harm behaviors are often there because they have just really not gotten what they needed. And sometimes attention is just, I am suffering. And so that is a way to wake people up to see that you're a full human that needs something, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Trauma is really common. Low self-esteem is really common. People pleasing, really common. Codependent behaviors, maybe internalizing conflict or externalizing it. Lots of blaming and fighting and that kind of thing. And then just having this pattern in your relationships.
Right.
But there's hope. Okay. So we're going to use the hope to help.
I like some hope. That's awesome. Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. Some hope. Okay. So this, if you are the person, so if the brother was listening to this as a younger person while the scapegoat, and then now the brothers, that there is a lot you can do to get out of being the family scapegoat. Sometimes the first thing is just like seeing that that's what it is.
Yeah.
There's I don't know how many influencers on TikTok who are scapegoat specialists. You could always find one of them and watch a little content and be like, oh, that fits me. That doesn't fit me. That is it's a common dynamic that a lot of people have felt really crappy. And once they start to understand it, they can really sort of wrap their head around, this is what's happening.
Right.
And so you can learn to set healthy boundaries. You can get therapy. There are support, online support groups, for this kind of thing. Of course there is. And working to sort of love yourself when that's really what you've always been needing and trying to do is feel loved and lovable, but that's really tough to do when all the blame has been put on you. Right.
Right.
Practice taking responsibility. Ooh, other flipping the, I'm the victim position.
Wow. Yeah. It's almost like, in a tug of war, releasing the rope kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of fighting it. Wow.
Yes. Yes. And recognizing maybe what you need to do to heal or exit the triangle or exit the scapegoat role, what you need to actually be responsible for. And that's probably need a little help pulling that apart. Another really big one is developing good friendships, trying to grow your social support system so that, you know, I think the dictates of you're a good person or not just coming from mom and dad can just be dangerous for anybody.
Yeah.
And it's highly important and really impactful not to to discount that, but building your own source of family and your own connections is a really powerful way to work through that. So there's therapy, guys. There's all sorts of branches of therapy that would be helpful for this. So let's just talk specifically about these brothers. So they're all adults. We're looking at, they didn't give ages, but
we don't know ages.
Yeah. We know six years between, years between the middle and the final kid, but we don't even know the difference between the older kid and the middle kid.
Right.
So.
Right.
And they live 100 miles apart or something.
100? Yeah.
At least the youngest lives 100 miles from the writer. We don't know where the oldest lives.
Yeah. Sounds like they talk more though, for sure.
But notice what the relationship, who is arbitrating the relationship? Being a grown adult and having my parents tell me that I should do more to help him, even though he lives hundreds of miles away and never really listened to me anyway. Mm-hmm. So my guess is these brothers have not done the work to build a relationship without their parents' involvement. Hmm. And easy to do because you never had to. It was always mitigated.
Yeah.
He doesn't say which parent. So maybe it's both parents, maybe it's just one of them. I don't know. But that person has put them in a triangle themselves.
It does sound like the oldest brother and this middle brother, the writer, have developed their friendship because he says, my older brother and I still marvel at how they fawn over him, which means they're talking, they're almost like a separate little tribe.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Right. And they were both golden children, and then they were both, they've both become
the scapegoat. Yeah.
Scapegoats. And probably not in the serious term of scapegoats, but they're just now paying the price for some, I guess it is scapegoating, right? Paying the price for their brother's lack of whatever.
They're paying the price for being the golden children for so long, unfortunately, which was not their choice. Yeah.
Yes. 100%. And take even the fact that they're still asking this brother to do something for this other brother. I assume they're grown. I assume this other brother maybe doesn't even know that. I don't know. But this is where if you can take a corner out of a triangle where it does not belong, and your relationship with your brother, mitigated by your parents, is no longer belongs, potentially. And I'm saying that with a little too much confidence, but that'd be something to really think about. Why are you talking? You say he never really listened to me anyway. Well, he never listened to you parent him because mom and dad had you parent him. But would he connect with you? Is that a thing we haven't maybe tried? Because I promise nobody loves the position their parents put him in any of these cases, right? Mm-hmm. The flip maybe has given everyone some empathy for each other.
Sure.
But the job of connecting as siblings isn't your parents. Though it sounds like they still want to make that happen. That's a hard thing to just let be, right? Especially if you've meddled forever. It's really hard to just let your grown children. So I recommend a don't tell mom lunch, and you just get to know, or dad, and you just get to know each other a little bit, or reach out and check on one another. And if you're like, yeah, that's the last thing I want to do. Okay, well then ask yourself, what's really going on? Is it, do you really know this person? Mm. Or is it only sort of filtered through he's the baby and he was spoiled, right? Yeah. Some of your very young feelings about this dynamic. So something to think about. But really taking a point out of a triangle is a very powerful thing and really hard to do when that point is apparent because they used to have all the power. And I read this and I'm like, well, they still have all the power.
Yeah. They've just shifted it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I feel like there's a version of this in everybody's family. This one feels especially they've really built a wall up around it. And their family dynamic. It's not going to be that extreme for some people, obviously. But if you're out there and you hear this and you're like, oh, that's similar. Or, this is the difference in our family or whatever. We love follow-ups. So so let us know. If you're a scapegoat in some weird way that we haven't discussed here, let us know. We can continue the discussion. Or any questions that you may have for Wendy, you can send them to themorningstream@gmail.com or you can text us at 801-471-0462. Wendy, how's the weather over there? You guys all right? Did you get enough?
It's really warm and sunny.
So no real winter this year. You just didn't get it.
Now,
okay. Not really.
And this weekend's like 75 degrees. Like
That's jacked.
There was a foot of snow last April.
Yeah.
And I promise I'll just keep getting grumpier about this. So yeah.
Great. We'll have to check in on your grumpiness and you'll use the weather as a scapegoat and everything will be perfect.
I'll work on my sound for next time.
No, don't worry about it. You're fine. It's windy. Everybody, check her as she goes. And if you're coming to Vegas, get ready to meet her because she's not nearly as intimidating as you think she is. Okay.
Oh, she is 100%.
Oh, yeah. I'm real scary.
She's shorter than I am, and that's all you need to know. I don't know what that means. It means nothing. All right. I'll see you later. Off she goes. All right. We are nearly done here. Perfect timing because in about 15 minutes, my daughter has a meeting. Brian has a meeting. All of us have meetings. Yep. I actually have
meetings,
a meeting,
but meetings.
Mine's a text meeting, so I don't have to talk, which is kind of nice.
Oh, yours will be much nicer than mine. I'm either going to get some very good news or some very bad news in my meeting. So
fingers crossed, man. I don't want you to get dinged on that. That sucks.
Jeez Louise.
We're going to take our leave.
Let me drive people to the airport and pay $5,500 for the privilege right now.
What a wonderful job it's been. All right, we're going to go. The only thing I'd say is keep your eye on other shows and stuff. Coverville, as Brian mentioned earlier, will happen today.
Hour and 15 minutes. Soul Asylum, Dave Perner. Listen to covers of. They do a nice cover of a Smokey Robinson song, an Alice Cooper song, a Marvin Gaye song I mentioned earlier, but a lot of people doing covers of them. So you're going to hear like their big songs, Runaway Train, Black Gold, stuff like that, but also some lesser known songs, Closer to the Stars, Cartoon, The Game, things like that. So
nice.
Be there for that. twitch.tv/Coverville. And I'm playing my Baron Zemo Mill deck where I basically go through and try and delete every card my opponent has in Marvel Snap before they have a chance to play them all.
Nice. Rock those socks or something. tonight, Core, 5 p.m. Mountain Time, and be there for that. We got me, Bo, and John, lots to talk about there, and a bunch of other content. You can check out the schedule on the site if you are interested in all the other things coming up. And I think that'll do it for us. The site for everything is frogpants.com/TMS. You can go visit there and find all these links yourself. And a big thanks again to everybody for your help with the MS-150 link. I put some additional stuff out. Looks like you already hit another milestone just now.
Hit another milestone. You guys are awesome. Just during the show, I've crossed the $1,000 mark. So well on our way, and I'll post photos from my rides. My goal today is it's an early one for my rides every season, which is getting the top of the reservoir over here in Arvada, which is three switchback hills and then about a mile with a 15% grade up.
Ooh,
so
that
doesn't sound
hard.
Like a lot, but that is a long, steady slog that basically I just have to drop down into three or two gear and push my way through.
Well, so enjoy that. Good luck with it. We'll follow up on Monday. And in the meantime, Brian will play a little song here at the end of the show for us.
I will totally do that. Matthew wrote in and said, good morning, sausage and bacon. April 3rd saw me complete my second year in my dream job. No, I still have not been fired, thanks to the vote of confidence last year, Scott. Since starting this role, I have decided to start going to more live gigs again. In the past 12 months, I've been to see Arion, Brothers of Metal, Glory Hammer, Lordi, Baby Metal, Sabaton, Butcher Babies, and a whole lot more. If the ever-esteemed cover master could find a cover by or of any of the aforementioned bands, it would be much appreciated. As always, a big thanks to 80 for making it so I actually enjoy coming to work 5 days a week. Love the show, though. Matthew.
Nice.
I can only surmise that it really doesn't matter what I play for Matthew, because after seeing 12 months of those bands in concert, he wouldn't even be able to hear it if I played a Spice Girls song. But I'm still going to try and honor his wishes. From their album, let's get it here. I'm playing Lordi. Lordi did a great cover of all things, the Pointer Sisters, I'm So Excited. Yes, sort of a heavy metal, borderline screaming Cookie Monster sound version of I'm So Excited by the Pointer Sisters. They released this on their 2014 album Scare Force 1 on the deluxe edition. Can't find it on the regular edition. Gotta buy the deluxe. Here is Lordi and their cover of the Pointer Sisters, I'm So Excited.
Frogpants.com.
Why can't you just leave well enough alone?
No, I don't.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.